At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Previously, Podcast Network.
Wait a second. How'd you find out about us?
It was online, posted on the internet.
Heard of it?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 13, Up in Flames! Whee! And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hi!
Yeah, hello. I'd just like to say before we begin that Tara's subsection headers in this for this episode are particularly well done.
Thank you so much.
There it is.
I see what you did there. This is one of the few episodes of this season that I actually have like had a pretty clear memory of the whole way through. And I yesterday, as we record this, posted a GIF that I had made of Mutt's opening a door and having a wall of flames come out to hit him with the caption, when the take is too hot, which I stand by. But immediately people started responding to it because they remembered this episode so well. And Richard Lawson, friend of our previously.tv and of us, called this episode important because it was the precursor to Kelly's spiritual journey, of course, and our former Extra Hot Great colleague Joe Reed agreed these were some of the most important episodes of his high school years, so I guess this is important, so we should get to it, unless we have any site business.
Mm-mm.
All right, let's start with our B story. Yes.
Given the content of this episode, I really feel that now is a great time for you listeners to buy The Blaze, A Lot of Ferrets Read It t-shirt from GlockRoy.com.
Great point.
Yeah, hope you like these quote-unquote jokes, because we've got a million of them.
Well, let's get to the next one with our B story. Emily's still carrying a torch for Brandon. So Brandon and Kelly bring Cindy an enormous bag of pine cones, which Cindy intends to use as kindling in the fireplace. Okay, I've never heard of that before. Cindy brings up Kelly's 17 cover, which was supposed to be a huge secret, as if. Kelly pretends she doesn't care, but clearly she does, and Cindy is excited. And there's a very topical joke about Kelly's future career as a supermodel making her a target for the newly single Billy Joel. When the phone rings, Brandon jokes that it's Billy, and Kelly picks it up, like residents of the home are not standing right there. But of course, it's contrivance to set up this clip number two.
I have an international person-to-person call for Brandon Walsh.
I'll accept that call. Hello, Brenda?
No, not Brenda. Is Brandon there?
Just a minute. It's for you.
This is Brandon.
Hi, this is Emily.
Well, howdy, stranger.
Blast from the past, huh?
I'll say. So, where are you?
Well, right now I'm in Paris, but I'm getting on a plane for the States tomorrow.
Really?
Yeah, and I have a layover in L.A. tomorrow night. I was hoping you'd be around.
I'll be here.
Great.
Yeah, great.
Is it great? It seems like it's kind of not.
Oh, man. He's being so obviously fake. But yes, I'm glad you brought up that Kelly not only picks up the phone, but also happily accepts a collect international call on a phone that she doesn't pay the bill for.
Yeah.
Fuck off. Maybe ask.
Yeah. Also, speaking of things in this scene that are bad, Emily's new hair. Please go to previously.tv to look up the visual aids for this episode, because she got bangs. They are terrible.
All the way around, basically.
Oh my God, it's so bad.
She and David Silver are super close to having the same haircut right now.
Oh my God, you're right. Hers is like, it's a little longer on the sides, but yes, they're definitely on the same continuum to give you an idea of how bad it is. Moving on. At her apartment later, Kelly passive-aggressively forces Brandon to tell everyone there that he's going to be seeing Emily the next night. David has to ask whether she wasn't that fire starter because he wasn't really part of the gang when all that went down. And Brandon then follows a still pissy Kelly to her room. Clip number three.
Kel, will you stop the bombing?
I hate that he uses that expression all the time. Like, it's not cute.
No.
Stop using it. Mm-hmm. And he's also standing in such a way that really, like, we have a still of it in the visual aids. It looks like he's about to hit her, like, close fist.
Yeah.
Take it easy. You shouldn't be picking up your fucking crazy ex-girlfriend, literally, at the airport. Mm-hmm. No, it's not how that works.
Right. Granted, she was not that crazy when he last saw her, but Kelly doesn't know about any of that. Anyway, this is what they're about to discuss. Brandon says that Emily's just a friend, but Brenda apparently already told Kelly all about Brandon and Emily having seen each other at Thanksgiving the previous year. And Kelly asks him point blank what happened. And at first, Brandon acts like they just hung out and doesn't tell her anything about having slept with Emily a million times and asked her to change schools to be with him and everything else that happened. But under pressure, he admits at least the sex part. However, he says that was before Kelly and insists a little too emphatically that he no longer has any feelings for Emily at all. So I guess he totally doesn't. Cough. That night, Kelly rolls over. Brandon is awake and in bed. Brandon's awake and apparently does own undershirts, but only to sleep in, not to wear under things, which he never does. # chest hair. He wanders out on Kelly's deck to remember the last time he and Emily said goodbye. His hair looked dumber then. Hers was not great, but better than the bangs. Kelly comes out having been woken up by the Santa Anas, she says. And then she remembers the last Santa Anas, which is when Dylan lectured her about them the last time they got back together the previous year. In the present.
More like the Santa Anus. Am I right? I am right.
You are. In the present, Brandon asks Kelly what she's thinking, and she notes elliptically that a lot happens in a year. And then we watch them walk back inside for like 10 minutes. Cut. Kelly later the next day walks hand in hand with Dylan at rehab very flirtfully. He asks what she's been up to, and she acts like she hates admitting that she's been modeling and maybe on a cover soon. Anyway, he's in a situation that requires his tolerance. Clip number four.
Notice the charm bracelet. It means I don't have the right to criticize anybody.
Uh-huh. So, since you've never had the right to criticize anybody because you are a praying little boitus, uh-huh, why do you always criticize everybody?
It's a really good point.
Shut up. Like, isn't the point of you being in rehab that we don't have to deal with you for a few weeks? Go away. Shut up.
But why is she holding his hand? Like, I know she's there to see him as a friend, but that's not a friend thing. That's weird. Anyway.
Yeah, that is, yeah, whatever.
Go ahead.
Don't hold your hand till we go shopping. Usually because my hands are too full of Anthropology bags, but still, that's weird.
Yeah. Kelly assumes that Dylan would think her modeling is silly and shallow, which he denies. He says he would have fallen in love with her whether she was voted most beautiful in high school or not. He asks after Brandon. She says he's fine and they're still together. Dylan won't pretend it's easy being in rehab. He says he's had time to think and realize that his problem started when he lost Kelly. Kelly is sorry, but Dylan is glad one of them can be happy rather than both miserable, and then says he's not actually miserable anymore. He's terrified. Fascinating. Bye, Dylan. That's the end of him for the episode. Brandon at home is dressing up for this pickup in one of his dumb ties when Andrea comes up to say hi. She's just dropped Hannah off for his parents to babysit. She knows he's seeing Emily, and after Brandon looks both ways to make sure the coast is clear, he admits that hearing her voice rekindled something, and now he can't stop thinking about her. Andrea always knew they were more than just a flash in the pan, keeping it on theme. He feels guilty about it since he really loves Kelly, and Andrea surmises that he means he's still in love with Emily, but he doesn't think so. Anyway, what can happen in a 4-hour layover? Probably nothing. And then Brandon and Emily are reunited at LAX, the most romantic place on earth. Not. She has 3 more years of the program that she's in. She's taking a seminar at the Scripps Institute in La Jolla and says she wouldn't rule out changing institutions, but she really loves France. Brandon tries to get Emily to go to this rave, which we'll get to, but she tells him why she's not into it in clip number 5.
To be honest, I'd really rather avoid that whole party scene thing. I wouldn't want you to think I returned to my wild teenage ways.
I've forgotten those days.
Well, I haven't.
Come on, Em. Our little walk on the wild side was 3 years ago. You don't have to carry that around with you still.
Let us forgive but not forget, lest we repeat ourselves.
There's also a little thing called redemption. I think you've earned that by now.
I love you.
Crickets.
I'm sorry, that just slipped out.
No, that's fine. I could really go for a cup of coffee. What do you say we...
That would be great.
I can't believe she doesn't also say, I don't want to go to the peach pit either, but she doesn't.
Yeah, and why doesn't she? Like, seriously, why would you bring her there when you'll see everyone you know?
Well, maybe because he knows everyone he knows is going to be at this rave, but still, Nat is there. Maybe because he gets the coffee for free and he is literally that cheap. Anyway.
Fair enough.
Also, she might have suggested that she would rather go somewhere less bright and loud after her million-hour flight, but whatever. After some blah about how comfortable the place is, Emily says she has a confession. Brandon instantly looks terrified, but it's that she doesn't have another flight tonight. She's not going to La Jolla until next week. Also, why would she do a 4-hour layover for a flight from L.A. to La Jolla? She could drive there in less time. Anyway, she has options, which she lays out in clip number 6.
Well, I could go to San Francisco and visit my old friend Rosie, or I can go to San Diego early.
No.
Or I could stay here.
Why didn't you mention this on the phone?
Well, I didn't want to scare you off. I wanted to see how things were between us first.
I see.
So how are things between us?
I've got a girlfriend now, Em.
Anyone I know?
Actually, yes. It's Kelly Taylor.
Why? Kelly's about as Beverly Hills as you can get. I'm sorry. That was wrong of me.
Oh, that's okay. She's changed a lot.
I'm sure she has.
Not for the better.
Em, what'd you expect me to do? You said you'd call. You never did. You said you'd write. I didn't even get a postcard.
I know. I'm sorry.
What happened?
I guess I figured it would be easier to forget things if we didn't talk at all.
I don't remember saying I wanted to forget.
But we agreed to live separate lives. And I guess I didn't want to hear about it if you were moving on. It'd be too painful. I'm not blaming you. I'm just disappointed.
Didn't you date anybody while you were in France?
Yeah, I met a guy there, but... he wasn't you.
That's a plus.
Sorry. When I didn't hear from you, I just gave up on us.
Well, bummer for me, huh?
By the way, gave up on us. Like, he started seeing Lucinda like 3 episodes after Thanksgiving, so whatever to that.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, then Brandon...
Also, did she meet Reek? That would be awesome. In fact, that's who she met.
He at business school at USC or UCLA or something?
They have vacations, Tara.
That's true. They do. Brandon then drives Emily along the coast. She comments that they could be back in San Francisco in 8 hours. And if they did, would it be the same as it was last year? Brandon is noncommittal, like he didn't just tell her he has a girlfriend now. Emily thinks it might be even better than they remembered, but accepts that they're not going to find out. She's sad, and Brandon's a dick, so of course he has to twist the knife in clip number 7.
You know, Em, if you'd asked me a year ago to move up to San Francisco, I would have.
I know. Chalk it up to bad timing.
OK. okay.
Actually, that's what we in the Brandon is a douchebag business like to call dodging a bullet.
Yes, a narrow escape. Brandon is then like ready to head back, as if we didn't already establish that she has nowhere to go. But suddenly she's at a hotel that she suddenly booked on her Hotel Tonight app, I guess. They're stiff and weird as he walks her to her door and he goes in for a chaste kiss. But clip number 8.
I don't want to say goodbye.
Neither do I.
Then don't.
It's so loud.
He just gloms on to her face. And this was his actual girlfriend.
Yeah.
So this is apparently the priestly technique.
Yeah. Lucky her. God. Anyway, there is more to this episode. But first,
it's Beverly Hills 90210 Survivor Alex's birthday.
Alex is married to our very own Daniel McCachran, who thought that, well, Danny.
Since she married a Brandon, you should talk about 5 ways it would be terrible to be married to the actual Brandon.
It's the Brandon Nuptial Challenge!
Great idea, but Danny, you're obviously an Alex Diaz A, so roll up those jean jacket sleeves and believe in yourself, and B, we have to stop at 5, but we can't.
We don't really, but we will try to stop at 5. As requested, 5 ways Brandon would suck as a husband.
Number 1, when prompted to kiss the bride, would wind his hand into the back of the complicated hairstyle your stylist just spent 90 minutes crafting, snarling it all up just in time for pictures, and gnawing off your airbrushed makeup from the chin down.
Constantly knocking shit off the low boy when he paddle cock walks past it, like, does he mind? That ceramic bunny belonged to your grandma.
Bransplains every single goddamn thing to you, from sports to manual shift transmissions to your own method of birth control, and also does this to the cat and your parents and total strangers.
Brain keeps setting off the burglar alarm.
Refuses to keep still so you can rest your iced tea glass on the elbow height pomade shelf that is his tiny, tiny head.
From all of us here at Again With This,
and me, your Brandon.
Happy birthday, Alex!
Or, as your husband would say, Feliz cumpleaños a ti.
And we're back for our A plot. Steve throws the hottest party of the year.
Oh, sick burn.
All right. Steve has a new business venture, and it's a one night holiday rave. He has organized it with Griffin, and they're putting up flyers at the Peach Pit. Nat is briefly all in a tiz that they're throwing the rave at some house Griffin found and not at the rug store, which he has a point. A rave probably works better someplace with high ceilings, but the store's not going to be ready for another 3 weeks. So Nat drops it. Steve offers to cut Nat in, but of course it's Nat. So he cheerfully declines. Sigh.
Also maybe they thought it wasn't the best, given what we find out later, to have the rave at a carpet store.
Ooh, yeah. Perhaps. That would be very prescient if they did. Oh my God. Also established in this scene, Griffin is resentful of Steve for bossing him around and taking all the credit. I wonder if that will come up later. Val enters and offers Steve help setting up the rave, but Steve, civil if not terribly friendly, turns her down in clip number 9.
What about publicity?
I've got that covered. David and Claire are going to post it on some electronic bulletin board.
Drink!
Well, then I'll help in some other way. I'll pass the flyers out. Something. You know, we had a pretty good time throwing the other rave, don't you think?
It was very different.
You know, we made a good team.
Okay, you know what? Hand some of these out. Anything for the party.
Val should not have to work this hard to get in with these fucking boobs, by the way.
Agree, especially not that one.
I mean, she's at school. Make new friends. I'm just saying. Anyway, at the beach apartment, Claire has to walk David through every step of posting the party announcement on Delphi. Clip number 10.
Drink.
Okay, now just pick the Delphi form where you want it posted.
Oh, man, there's a lot of choices.
Okay, look for 20-somethings, college parties, something like that.
Oops.
Oops? What's that?
Well, I just dropped it in the wrong form, but that's okay. Let's see here. Retrieved. Reposted. Bingo. Mission accomplished.
You sure?
Claire, I know what I'm doing.
He doesn't. Also, please go to the visual aids on previously.tv to see the GIF that I made of the various forum titles rolling by, because some of them are choice. Donna then enters with Ray and pitches him as a musical act for a rave, him and his guitar. Sure. Ray declines, mentioning that Griffin wouldn't go for it, which is a great point. At the house, Steve enthuses about this location. The supposed Hancock Park mansion looks like a regular low-ceiling family home and not one that will survive the wear and tear of the event they're planning at all. Foreshadowing, Steve is excited to hire some guy with a taco truck who will work cheap. Griffin doesn't think they need to get so fancy and is right. Steve also wants to set up mood rooms upstairs, but Griffin is pretty sure they will not remotely be able to pull it all together in a day. While he and Steve are arguing about it, a bare bulb above Val flickers out and Steve says it's the second time that fuse has blown. I wonder if that will come up later also.
Oh, I'm sure it won't.
Probably not. Griffin and Steve start bickering, but Val interrupts with a punch list divided among the three of them. Griffin takes his and leaves, whereupon Steve asks why Val is being so helpful. He assumes that she wants a cut of the door, which she should, but Val says she actually wants another chance with him. Well, I mean, given the other options, sure. the day of the party, Steve confers with his offensive stereotype of a Latino taco truck guy in clip 11.
Have you had any experience with this kind of thing yet?
Eduardo. Yeah, experience.
Anything this big, though?
Oh, yeah, big. All big gigs.
Yeah, but I'm talking really big. Huge. I'm gonna eat enough for 500 people, and I'm not talking about punching cookies. Talking about burritos, nachos, the whole enchilada.
Chicken or cheese.
Whatever's cheaper.
No problem.
Valerie, could you show me amigo Eduardo where the appliances that work in the kitchen are?
Oh, Steve. Don't. What the?
Jesus. Spanish. Also, no one eats at a rave.
No.
It's a rave. They're all high.
Yes.
Get booze.
And if they were eating, they would not be eating tacos. It seems like the worst thing.
Yeah. Like, yes, I'm going to take a burrito out onto the dance floor.
Yeah. Unless
actually, that is one thing that might get me to go out on the dance floor. I'm kind of a Brandon in that regard, but it's like, you could just stand there and eat your burrito. Great.
Yeah.
Sold.
But unless they're like candy burritos on an elastic necklace, like, no.
Exactly.
Anyway. Yeah, no. Donna shows up in Ray's truck to lend to Steve for various party prep shit and trades the use of it for a gig for Ray in one of the mood rooms. Hooray! Who cares? We will not see any of this. I assume it got cut from syndication / DVDs. And then it's time for the rave, which looks weak as hell. Donna and Kelly show up with their twin hairs, which you can see in the visual aids. And then their first two guests show up and they're cute girls. The curly-haired one says the notice of the party was posted on the internet, and Steve's like, that's us, the one party mentioned on the internet. Ladies decide to stay and are followed in by a shitload of cute ladies, all in pairs. Steve raises a suspicious eyebrow, which I made a gif of, like Steve has gaydar all of a sudden, but somehow he does and figures out that all of these pairs of ladies are in fact couples from the Women Seeking Women forum, which is where David mistakenly posted the note. Hence Sarah's carpet joke. Claire's like, whatever, no
I'm
doubt.
I'm a terrible person, sorry.
Claire doesn't care, no doubt, because she's going to get tons of play with this crowd, but then the fuse blows again. Later, the party's rolling. Val tells Steve they should go upstairs, which of course is when the power goes out again. Griffin tells Steve he'll take care of it and screws in another fuse. Eduardo, the Latino stereotype, is not so sure about this in clip 12.
No good. It's too much power.
Ah, it's fine. It's just the little ones that keep blowing out.
It's too dangerous. It's muy peligroso, senor.
I see. So you're a caterer and an electrician. Tell you what, why don't you worry about the food and then me worry about the power?
Okay, Griffin. Sure,
yeah,
that you
you're
know.
Neither, Dick. Take it easy. And also, get a haircut. You look like the back of a bus.
It really is bad. After some commercials, Muntz still hasn't figured out that all the ladies who showed up in a cluster are lesbians. The cute, curly-haired girl comes over to ask Claire to dance. Claire suggests that they all dance together, but left out is the woman that Curly came with, and she watches them go looking pissed. Curly sees her and motions her over to no avail. Muntz comes over to tell Steve there are idiots throwing water balloons out a window. Val kicks them out, says she didn't know throwing a party would involve so much damage control. Like, literally, that's all there is to do at a party when you're in college or high school. Get the knack, Val. but she's charmed by the room they've ended up in which there is a balsa wood birdcage for no reason. Like, the whole rest of the house is empty. Whatever. It's all a pretext for coming
I wonder why that's always a thing, like abandoned house set design.
I don't know.
There's either that or like the old style pram turned on its side.
Right.
Like, okay, take it easy. Is it haunted too? Settle down.
He says they should stop fooling around before they start something they can't finish. But Val says she's such a strong finisher. Oh, Val. Kelly finds David and Claire to tell him she's ready to go. She's annoyed that Brandon never showed up, and Claire tells her she doesn't have to worry about Brandon's fidelity. Kelly is about to go call a cab when she suddenly has to pee and gets in line for the bathroom. She's in line behind Curly, whose name is Allison. Kelly wishes her happy waiting and makes to leave because she heard about a secret bathroom downstairs. Allison goes with her, and they walk right past straight hair pissy face on the way. Allison tells her it's not what she thinks and that she'll be right back. So Kelly and Allison end up in an old screening room that somehow no one has already discovered and befouled, as if.
And there's no way it would fit in that squatty house either, but okay. Yeah.
There's boring talk about Gone with the Wind and film school. Kelly says it's completely soundproof in there. I wonder if that will come up later also, too. Additionally, Allison would like a screening room like this someday, but first, pee. And then the fuse box starts sparking. Uh-oh. Griffin goes looking for Steve to cover for him just in time for the power to go off again. Muntz goes to look, opens a door, and an inferno comes bursting out at him, which I made a gif of, as previously mentioned. Cue the total chaos as everyone tries to get out without burning alive. Ray sends Donna out with his guitar, LOL, and makes sure everyone's come down from the second floor, which is how he sees Val and Steve creeping out of their fuck room.
That's how his stunt double sees it. The cuts between them are so terrible, yeah. And it's very, like, the guy turns to the side. You can see, like, a third of his face. He looks like Robert Patrick, like... I don't think it was possible to find somebody that was more obviously not Ray unless they went with, like, a lady with a blonde ponytail. I do wonder if this is how Jamie Walters got interested in the fighting of fires in real life, however.
Indeed. Ray then finds a blanket, douses it in a bowl of water that's just there for some reason, and throws it to Val and Steve.
For the bird?
I don't know. But in the completely soundproof screening room, Kelly and Allison are oblivious of everything that's going on until a light blinks and then Kelly smells smoke. So does Allison. Uh-oh, the doorknob is hot. Smoke starts pouring in around it. So they go to the bathroom because why not hold up in the even smaller pod inside the soundproof death trap? Ray then is...
That one has a window, which they showed in the shot.
Whoops. They climbed out. I missed that. Of course it does.
They hunker down right under it.
Oh, God.
Almost burned to death.
Idiots.
Window.
God. So then Ray wrestles straight hair pissy face outside, which she doesn't want to do because Allison is still inside. Griffin and Muntz talk about the disaster and how expensive it's going to be to fix, which is when Griffin sidles away from the scene. Cool dude alert. In the bathroom, Kelly is panicking hysterically in clip 13.
I can't believe this is happening.
Listen, I was on the best volunteer fire force in Oregon. If we can find something to get wet.
Oh, I bet Allison has experience doing that. Sorry.
I retract my earlier statement. Qatar is the worst.
You were saying you retract?
I retract my earlier statement about being the worst.
Yeah, no, I'm the worst.
That's you.
True.
Enjoy.
Allison wants to put a wet towel under the door to keep the smoke out. And she asks Kelly for her sweater for the same reason. Allison has to keep Kelly calm, saying her girlfriend is out there and she'll make the firefighters look for them. Idiot Kelly cries that her boyfriend didn't even show up tonight. Okay, lots of things are his fault in the world, but this is not among them, so leave him alone. Outside, the fire rages on. Steve goes crazy about what's going to happen next and where Griffin went, but at least everyone got out, right? Clip 14.
Fine, Allison.
They're still looking. I'm just glad Kelly got into that cab.
It's not that blonde girl, is it?
Why, did you see her?
If it's the one I saw, she didn't get in any cab. She was going downstairs with Allison.
Steve's cry face is majestic. It was originally I have in my notes to make a pic, but I made a GIF. It's in the visual aids. It's really something.
Yeah, I couldn't decide which to do, so I'm glad that you took care of that for all of us.
I did. Inside, Kelly is still totally useless in clip 15.
We're gonna die in here.
No, we're not. Don't say that.
Say it.
Didn't
we
see them tonight?
The last time I talked to Dana, we were fighting.
Brandon doesn't even know this is happening.
Listen, I'm not giving up. But if this is it, I'm glad I'm not going through this alone.
Me too.
God.
And then they make out.
It does. They are sitting very close together. Anyway, as the door chars and the flames start coming through the jam, Allison starts saying in Our Father, and they can hear voices outside and start screaming that they're in there. But is it too late? Yes, Kelly died. Just kidding. She doesn't die. Spoiler alert.
She should, though, from being stupid, because there's a fucking window. I mean, that's not their fault, but
right.
We couldn't have cut that out in post.
Yeah. Especially since this probably wasn't even really a house. Like, I assume it was all a set. Whatever. That's the end of the episode. Cliffhanger! Let's wrap it up. With our MVP. I'm going to say Eduardo, the taco truck guy, who knows more about electricity than Griffin.
Yeah. I like that pick.
All right.
But actually, I'm going to go with Munz, who is really, really committed to screaming fire and zigzagging around like a, you know, Brownian motion.
Yeah.
Like when you look at a microscope and all the molecules are like, he's like that, but just a pretty big molecule.
Nice. Least valuable player. Well, Griffin, who left everyone there to die and took zero responsibility for his part in this death trap.
Yeah. Whoever cut Emily's hair.
That was my runner-up.
All right, then. Whoever cut Emily's hair.
Because, especially since that happened in France, presumably, like, a French person should know better than that. That's the capital of style. Good Lord. Finally, let us do the Moo Moo Parker challenge. 5 ways from this episode Brandon could have ended up dead. Well, he was at LAX, so someone could have passed him some shady literature about some weird cause that gave him a paper cut, and then he got infected and died.
As you will see in the visual aids, he's wearing yet another pair of pants with several Starbucks within. They are so gigantic. Those could have gotten caught in the escalator he's standing right next to and dragged him to his death.
He's very distracted driving, having a relationship talk with Emily as they go along the coast. So he could have taken his eyes off the road at the wrong time and flipped his car and died.
Nat could have been so scandalized by his appearance at the Peach Pit with Emily that he accidentally poured coffee in Brandon's lap, which caused third-degree burns over his entire tiny groin, which led to sepsis and led to his death.
Strangled with his ugly tie. That makes 5.
Sure. Yes. Next time on Again With This, it pays to be credits cast as Allison is charbroiled while Kelly gets away with a cosmetic crisping. But can Brandon get away with Frenching Emily while his girlfriend's modeling dreams went up in smoke? And is Steve headed for jail? Or an even worse punishment? Hannah's first Hanukkah! You'll want to pour gasoline on our visual aids, which you can find on our website for this and every other Again With This episode at previously.tv, and you can follow us on Twitter at previouslytv. I'm Mood Room Sarah D. Bunting, and you can find me on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host, Walk on the Wild Side Tar Ariano, is also on Twitter at Tar Ariano, and electronic bulletin board David T. Cole serves as our producer, and you can find him on Twitter at Galark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
Hey,
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.